aspects of the immunization program, it seems that the noise is
the advantage is that certain illnesses the body will be vulnerable if we aren't immunized over it. And this is for centuries we've been like that, that's why we got vulnerable. But we can help ourselves so that we don't become toxic by it or reactive to it. A little of that substance is to help the immune level of the body. So if they put it in, and I've had vaccination, so what it did was just to wash the area with apple cider vinegar and rub aloe vera or rub castor oil in it, and that immediately neutralizes the effect of the immunization. So it gives the body a little to work with, but not too much to overtax it. Now, the friends of mine who had to go to India and had to have it, and he knows some of them, Ginny and all these people, they had to have the immunization by law to put the plane to go to India. So they went to take it, and they carried the apple cider vinegar and the aloe vera. As soon as they applied it, all they did was to wash it off when they came out. They didn't fight the immigration people or the health people. They just went in and they came out. Because you have that much time before it really would go on doing things. So a little was enough for them to, and when they got out into India, and all the others that didn't do it or all around the people, I told the girl, says, whenever you arrive in the little area in the town of India, look for a little of the local alcohol that they grow there or make there. Just take a little, just a teaspoon, to stabilize the intestinal tract. And then you wouldn't have the local problem. And so when she was there, she could eat all their Indian food, the way they cook it, and have no problems. And all the rest who were strict gung-ho watching it, they ended up having sickness, and when they came back, they had to be treated by their doctors. So the ones that came to my clinic and had to go on a trip, they, wherever they were, they just took a teaspoon of the local alcohol, drank it, and ate the food. And that was a natural immunization for the colon. It wasn't used for food, was used for medicine, a little for the stomach's sake, that humanized it and made them survive all the rigors of India traveling to the different parts.
Now you're
going to
start traveling, huh?
Is that one teaspoon per day or just one spell per day?
That's not per day.
No, per day.
The best time is in the most of those areas that made it from rice, or they made it from. So most of the alcohol they have is rice alcohol. Uh-huh. So you take it in the middle of the day. Sake, when that's best too, because sake is neutral, you find it all over. It's the most neutral alcohol for traveling through the western country, the eastern countries. If you travel into Mexico and South America, take it, take it. That's a 1 teaspoon. Neutralizing.
I got a question. Being a member of SRF,
well, what they're talking about is the overindulgence again, you see, because and then the people come there that are already overindulged, so they're trying to maintain a low profile, non-degrading environment. So in your own environment, you can take a little test or something. Outside of that, you should drink a bottle.
Well, if you do an eyedropper, that's a teaspoon. And you can do that in a box, in an eyedropper bottle.
Yeah, the bottle.
That's all you need.
So that's, yeah.
That's a teaspoon.
Get Montezuma's revenge.
Right, exactly.
It's like a Bach flower muffin.
I made a tincture today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you're going to make a Bach remedy, you still got to use brandy. I don't know how you're going to get around it.
Or vinegar.
Or vinegar, but brandy is more like a, let me put it this way, alcohol in the body is like antifreeze to your engine. That's exactly what the purpose of it. Your body is designed for that to keep it flowing so it doesn't build up any kind of a toxic reaction.
Also, if you give up alcohol completely, don't forget inositol, which is an alcohol and is an essential B vitamin, and also xylitol. And
they're all natural alcohol in your body. Sure. Now, here again, good, exactly. You, no matter how you try to cut off all the alcoholic content and all the toxic content from your body is going to produce natural alcohol, and it's going to store some natural toxins.
In fact, a meat eater would be an alcoholic. They produce much more alcohol.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Meat and grain combined together with fermented spices.
You can ferment your own. You can be a living still if you want.
There
that's
you
a relationship.
And that's why you're eating on time. So if you eat on time,
and
you
yeast.
Can relate these things. All right. We said you must know your blood type. And also, you must know when to put in the food at different times of the day. The next thing you need to know is which foods can be eaten raw and which ones cannot be eaten raw, because they are valid to have raw food and it's valid to have some cooked food. Even Yogananda says we can't get rid of the cooked, we try. He's your society. But even so, some foods have to be eaten cooked. So on the morning, this is morning food, they have to be cooked. Plantain. There's no way to eat it raw. It's a cousin to the banana. And you leave it there and it'll get ripe and ripe and ripe, and eventually you'll have to throw it away because it never can be eaten. It's still raw. And it starts out like a banana, green, turns yellow, and turns brown and black, and you'll have to throw it. But if you cook it, bake it, or slice it up in your vegetables, you can eat it. If you bake it, it makes a beautiful filling for a pie. Make a crust out the rice flour. And you can mix it with a little wheat flour to make the rice crust. Or if you take the Rice Krispie and make a base for the pie filling out of the plantain, and add your maple syrup into the plantains, you want to add a little dates, so there you have a pie filler right on top, and you can use some little carob and have a cake right out of it. So there you have ready-made food that already used the heat. The plantain has to be cooked. Number two, bread food. You see that in Hawaii. Have you seen it in Hawaii? Yes. Bread fruit. It has to be cooked. Morning time, and the foods that must be cooked in the morning. Now if you combine coconut with these two and cook it, this is the first time the coconut will act as a polyunsaturate. When you combine it with these two foods. But outside of that, it will act as a saturated oil. But if you combine it with these two fruits and cook it together, it acts as a polyunsaturate, like a nut oil. So there again, nature plays our exception to the rule. Next one you must cook, don't eat it raw, and that's cashew. And this is what we're talking about, cashew, what cashew looks like. Where is the fruit? Inside, the seed is like a kiwi. The outside is like a fiber, brown. And the meat around it is like cotton candy. And then to the bottom of the fruit, there's a little sack, like a shoe, shaped like a boot, which we call the enema bag. It's the waste products of the fruit entering into here in the process. That is the nut. Now, you take that and roast it, don't eat it raw. And you can then convert it into milk for babies or you can use it for your protein. And that is very, very high in protein with nitrogen.
Grows on a tree.
But the fruit itself carries hanging on it. They can't ship the fruit because it rots too quick. So you can imagine how many of these the trees are there. So when they take the fruit down, convert it into jam and jellies, different things, and then they take this one and ship them out to this. No, they come mostly from Madagascar, Africa, and New Zealand. They have them in South America, not as much, but larger quantities in Africa or Madagascar.
Coconuts, does that mean coconuts should be cooked
all the time or only with this? Only with this, here. It can be eaten raw. When you cook it with these two, it will act as a polyunsaturated.
Okay, so I can be
cooking
it raw for breakfast?
Yeah.
Okay.
So cashew is a fruit?
Cashew is a fruit. The nut really is from this portion of the fruit.
And considered a fruit?
It's considered a fruit, yeah.
Hmm.
Well,
that's
oh, yeah.
It's good.
The cashew fruit is delicious. Actually, it's shaped like a pear. On the outside, it's pink. The inside is like cotton candy. And the seed is the size of a kiwi fruit. You ever see kiwi fruit?
Mm-hmm.
And the roughness of it is like the kiwi fruit. But then this little sack hangs on it, and that's the cashew seed, which we call the cashew nut. But this will make another cashew tree, but this will not make a cashew tree. So what they ship here is the one that we buy in quantity for making the milk and the protein and the butter. So we have cashew nut butter. But this, it can grow. So the FDA has even found it that when you take them raw, it affects the heart. So it must be roasted. This portion must be roasted. So they never eat the raw one. Always take it and roast it at 180 degrees for an hour or two. Now, that's food in the morning. Let's get some food in the middle of the day that must be cooked. These are foods that must be cooked. The rest can be eaten raw. All the other foods in the tree can be eaten raw. These must be cooked. Now, in the middle of the day, I'm not going to count flesh because, you know, raw flesh is not ideal. And so, if you have to eat a piece of meat, it has to be cooked. But that's meat. Number one, in this range here, you must cook tomatoes. It's not ideal raw unless it's tree ripened. That is ideal. Tree vine ripened. Unless it's vine ripened and it's unripened on the vine, you can put your hand and just pop it and it'll fall off your hand.
You can eat it right off the vine.
Eat that off the vine. That is ideal because everything has gone through to mature. Outside of that, it's not ideal. You get sick. So, but then you cook it. The next one is rhubarb. That must be cooked within this light range. All the grains can do either way. They can be cooked or they can be sprouted. That's one advantage of grains. Or soaked overnight, but it's not ideal merely to soak it overnight and eat it like that. For two reasons. The starch is too high. So if you combine it with beans, and your kidney beans are the starch blocker, then be all right. So that's rice and beans make better combination when they're heated together on a very low fire and cooked together. So that would be more ideal for the body. But outside of that, you should sprout your grain or cook it. But don't just soak it overnight and eat it like that. The starch content is too high. Not to say you can't eat it, but don't aggravate the colon too much. Number three, eggplant. It's That's the middle of the day again. Now the macrobiotic tells you they do not eat the nightshade family. This is nightshade family, tomato plant. The green pepper is nightshade plant. The potato is a nightshade plant. And they don't eat it. Well, because they didn't know when to eat it. That's what their problem. And the reason why the nightshade plant has some reaction is because most people don't understand how what it does. In the middle of the day, it breathes like every other plant. It takes in carbon dioxide and gives off oxygen. At night, it reverses and becomes like a human being. It breathes in oxygen and gives off carbon dioxide. So you have a problem if you don't know how to work with it. So to put a potato in the middle of the day, what are you doing to your mechanism? You're blocking it up, right? Yeah, and if you put in a tomato at night, what are you doing to it? You're blocking it. So that's why they had the problems, never realizing what they're doing. They were putting it in the wrong time, and the body was blocking it. Now, again, they didn't know that you could use it at certain times, and then you could use it any crazy time when? Lunar time, right. Between those 3 days before the full moon, the day of the full moon, and 3 days after the full moon, you can eat the nightshade family without the effect, because at that time the pressure of the Earth to the moon had stabilized the planet, it stabilized your colon, it stabilized everything that's growing in it. So it phases through, and you can take a kinesiological measurement and it'll go right through to neutral. And there's no real reaction, only during that time. Now the mother that is pregnant may reach out for a piece of tomato, an ice cream at night, or a pickle in her. She does some weird things, but that's the point when the lunar cycle is working. So we know that nothing is 100% fixed. It is flexible. Now there's one more in the middle of the day we don't cook. And that we do cook.
Beans?
You sprout them or cook them. Grain is the same. You can either sprout it or cook it. It's not ideal to eat it raw, soaked. Though you can do that, I don't say you can't. It's not so ideal. There's too much starch to contend with.
Well, but you're supposed to eat sprouted beans okay? Raw?
Yeah.
Really?
Salad?
Sure.
Have you never eaten
kidneys? Kidney beans?
Have you ever tried them? Have you ever seen them?
Yeah. Garbanzo beans? I've tried them. I can't handle it. Soybeans?
You better eat them than eat it.
In your case,
you're in for it.
The trauma is impeding. That's the only reason that. Then it's in the right time, it will start correcting the trauma. So, what is best about the bean, when you sprout it, you have a high content of nitrogen, and you have a high content of protein with the nitrogen. So you want to eat it sprouted, or if you cook it with the grain, that's why you cook bean with grain to get the high protein content. Now, some people can handle it sprouted. Some people can handle it better cooked with grain or cooked by itself. This is predetermined by trauma. A trauma took place that will block the body's ability to handle it. But as soon as you start getting back into it, it starts phasing out. And then you can handle it naturally. Also, your body will tell you what time it will take it back in and how much times a month it will take it back.
I thought a little lettuce.
Fine.
Water in
the
meal.
Yeah. So,
try not to drink water with
the meal. No, the water with the meal is not too ideal. You're washing down the meals in the body. The fourth food that you must cook that is the artichoke. In the middle of the day, nighttime, there are certain foods that must be cooked.
Why?
It's a fungus. And any fungus has a fungicidal reaction in your colon. And because it grows in darkness and it comes in there raw, the spores are going to do what?
Grow?
Yeah. They will find some point of the residual toxins to latch onto, and then they start their spores again.
Wow.
And that's how the doctors and the FDA now clamp down on the mushroom not being ideal because of the spore action occurring in the colon. And the body is a waste dump, you know, if you don't go to the bathroom regularly, what's going to happen is natural manure or natural fertilizer.
Really?
Right. I remember one person had a gardener and she was priding herself with all the beautiful flowers, and she called her friends to visit her here in Houston. She says, "My garden, Jose, has found a new type of fertilizer. And that's why all my flowers look so good."
And
then I asked Jose, "Can you tell my friend what type of fertilizer are you using?" And he said, "Manure."
Manure.
Or as long as you hear it, you laugh, you know, but you know what you're saying. Good. But the colon is a storage box for dead waste, and if you put in the raw mushroom, chances are the spores aren't washed good with mushroom, and it may activate the spore. So you don't want to take that chance with your colon. It's a whole lot of better to just steam it or saute it or boil it. Then you know for sure it will not have that effect on the colon. It will kill the spores off from every year. So, number two, potato, the white one. The yellow potato or sweet potato, the yam, you can eat raw. And if you have any iron deficiency or sickle cell anemic problems where your cells they have a tendency to be anemic, and that's the one problem with most people who find themselves tired and no pep. Low advertisement, Geritol, tired blood, you need iron, that's valid. Foods that with iron aren't going in on time, therefore they're blocking up. And in the middle of the day you have certain foods with iron, in the morning you have certain food with iron, in the nighttime you have certain food with iron, and if you don't get it in, you start blocking up. Now the old-fashioned tofu, the soft kind, if it's not sprouted, that's the one we make today. That's why it's sprouted. When we found out that it was the one that blocked iron. If you eat it too often, too long, and don't switch to something to give you iron, you'll have a tendency to block iron. So you need a sprouted tofu to give you the calcium, raise the calcium content, raise the protein content, and raise the iron content so that the body wouldn't get the tiredness. So the body will feel more alert. Now, number three, peanut. It must be cooked. Don't eat it raw. Because peanut is not a nut. It's a legume. But it grows under the ground, and it's toxic to the liver at night if you don't cook it.
It doesn't grow under the ground. It grows on the ground. Like a vine, doesn't it?
No.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
A bush.
Yeah, right. I was thinking it was growing.
I tell this story in Texas. This started when I went to the area. It's a big sandy area. The man who was going to compete with the planters wanted to grow peanuts years ago to compete. He's from New York. He wanted to grow, compete against planters. And so he came to Texas in the big sandy district and got the farmers to grow peanuts for him. And then he flew back at a time when he expected the old groves to have peanuts. And to his amazement, peanuts on there. There's no time allowed for it and everything, and he spent a lot of money. The farm, look in the farm, what happened? The farmer said, that's peanuts. Right? So, then I'm broke, no more peanuts. The farmer said, no. He said, you tell me I'm not broke, I do not know. He said, I give you the thing for just for the money I spent. The farmer said, all right. The farmer went to the bank and talked to the bank. The bank said, okay, we're giving you the money to the banker for the farmer. The farmer paid off the man. Then, on the way out, after he got his money, he says, tell me, we're going to do all that. I need to take advantage of you. The farmer said, I'll dig it up and sell it, and then I'll have all the peanuts. You do what? Dig them up. He said, that's where the peanut is.
Yes.
Yeah. The, that was a story in with Big Sandy. And just, I thought it was a big Texas joke. Come to find out the truth. That this man, when he didn't know where the peanut heat, like everybody thought peanut was above. But I myself, growing in South America, we used to call it gruber nut or monkey nut.
Mm-hmm.
Until I came to this country, I heard it called peanut. We didn't know it was peanut. We always used to call it monkey nut. The monkey will get out of the ground, dig it up, and take it out and start eating. We would do the same. Monkey see, monkey do.
Monkey see, monkey do.
But it should be roasted. Should not be roasted.
Isn't there a problem with, there a problem with roasting, though, because it heats the oil, which makes the oil hard to digest?
And the peanut?
Yeah.
You see, most people roast at a temperature too high for the oil. Oil doesn't alter its heat until 225.
Okay.
It doesn't do any alter. The heat has to be at 225 to alter it in the nut. So you're roasting it at 180 degrees. You don't go up to 200 degrees. You go up to 180 degrees to roast the nut.
They do that commercially?
Mm-hmm.
Below 200?
Below 200. And it stays there for an hour or two. I went up to a place here in California, by the Napa Valley near Sacramento here, and I saw the, and in Oakland, where, because I used to have to buy stuff from them from my health food store in Texas, and I saw how they were doing it, and the man who was doing it, they'd have all the nuts coming from the tree, the big sacks, and they'd have it two ways, with the shell or without the shell. And then they put them to the 180 degree. You see it arranged there, stack them in there, and let it roast.
What exactly is toxic in peanut that has to be altered?
The arsenic.
Arsenic?
Prefer unsalted to salted diet.
Yes. You don't want the salted diet because some people get high blood pressure. So a natural peanut roasted 180 degrees for an hour minimum is ideal for the body. And you need it for two things. You need it for the protein, number one, and you need it for the reaction on the liver, because it has a mineral that is ideal for the liver. It helps the liver to be elastic. And if you have been drinking alcohol to the extent you have been considered alcoholic, the liver has been hurt to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And the peanut now will start, the oils from the peanut will help to re-elasticize that liver.
Isn't there supposed to be something cancer-causing in peanuts? Isn't there supposed to be saponines or something in peanuts that supposed to cause cancer?
That's if they're raw. Not when it's cooked or roasted. Only when it's raw, you can do that.
Can you sprout peanuts? And will that take out the arsenic?
I've eaten sprouted peanuts, and no, it does. It's only the protein is there, and when it turns a sprout, it would be all right.
Sprouting's all right?
Yeah, to some extent, but I wouldn't want to eat it too much. A little as medicine, yes, but not as a food constantly. If it's sprouted. Because remember, it's a legume. It will react different to the body. So it's best to let it go to the full stage of a nut and roast it and make a butter or make a milk out of it or make a stuffing for your baked potato or put it on top of your salad or mix it in with pineapple. Then you're all right, because the vitamin C will offset any reaction.
Is peanut butter okay?
Yeah, peanut butter is okay. And we use that to phase down the body if it's too alkaline. Put it in the mouth, let it saliva integrate with it, bring down the alkalinity of the body. So peanut has its value. Now if you're traveling in space where darkness is more pronounced than light, that you're going to be more darkish versus light. You need foods of dark range. So peanut is an asset to your liver. It's an asset to your eyes. It's an asset to your gallbladder.
What is it about cooking that makes the arsenic so that the body won't absorb it?
It neutralizes it.
Neutralizes it?
Denatures it.
Yeah, it denatures it. So it doesn't have any effect on you. Now the next food you must cook is asparagus. Don't eat it raw. It's the same way like the peanut and the mushroom. It aggravates the same areas. So steam it, eat it. Sorry. Don't get too hung up that the raw food is ideal or cooked food is ideal. It's not truly 100% true.
Are dried vegetables considered cooked since they dry at about 110, 20?
No, they're not considered cooked. No, they're dried. They're just dehydrated out of their fluid.
Okay, so they're...
So what will happen to them, they're dry, and therefore your body has to give up its fluids to activate them for ingestion. Elimination, so it tends to drain away your fruits from you.
So if asparagus or mushrooms, if you ate them dry, they wouldn't, you'd still have to cook them?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a whole lot better to soak them and cook it.
What can you, should you not drink anything with meals, or is there anything that you can drink with meals?
Yes, there's something you can drink with the meals for digestion. There's 2 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar, 2 teaspoons of honey, and 8 ounces of distilled water. That's your best digestive liquid while you're eating. In case you eat anything bad and you're going to get an upset stomach and you're in doubt of what you get, this is your backup system right there. It's your emergency blanket. This is the emergency security blanket right here. Always have it ready in your refrigerator.
2 teaspoons.
I take papaya.
The papaya enzymes are okay in the morning. Distilled water.
Distilled water.
That's what you can drink with meals, but you don't recommend drinking anything else with meals.
No. Unless you can take soup.
That's not like no juices, like tomato juice.
You can take tomato juice with the meal, yes. Right. You can take if you want to eat breakfast, you can take apple juice. The juice of the fruit or vegetable is all right with the meal. That's not water, as a liquid per se. That's not washing down anything.
Water dilutes your stuff, your digestive juices also. That's what my dad had.
It has to have something inside to stabilize. So as a natural juice, baking in with the food. All right.
What about milk with lunch?
Milk with lunch, yes. Goat's milk is all right.
Goat's milk is okay. Okay.
I remember reading
the
answer question, sure.
Or you can drink a tea in the afternoon with your lunch. It's all right. Mm-hmm. You see, those are not washing it down.
What about if there's a food that you don't have a craving for anymore, and you know you just don't have a craving for it, you just not eat it if you don't have a craving for it? Like one of the ones that we talked about.
When you don't have a craving for a food, it's because of the traumatic effect.
Of the food. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have a trauma with it, and it's only through putting in that food you collect the trauma. Because whatever the trauma is, it will come to the surface and start releasing itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the foods we are addicted to sedates the trauma. The foods we are allergic to corrects the trauma. But they couldn't be allergic in the first place unless it was present at the time of the trauma. So whatever you find you didn't like, if you look back at the time of the trauma, that was one of the foods that was there.
It's important to eat
them at the right time, and they will start correcting. If I had an argument with someone and I felt embarrassed with it, I'd go and eat a food at the same time cycle to phase down the hostility or the anguish of the gland in the system, instead of going to take milk or some kind of food out of the cycle and try to sedate it and feel relaxed. If you put the very same food in the time cycle, then this will automatically phase out the reaction of hostility, phase out the reaction of toxicity.
Are you talking about a particular food of that time? Like say you and I get into an argument, we're eating a sandwich, and then you don't like bread after that?
Mm-hmm.
Then you would eat bread because that's what was traumatized.
That's right.
But you would not crave bread if you weren't traumatized. If you were traumatized and you still craved bread, that wasn't it.
No. See, because you have to crave it more than once a day.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're entitled to eat it once a day. But if you crave more than once a day, the trauma is increasing.
So do you stop eating the bread?
Yeah.
If you're craving it more than once a day?
You go back and take some other food. Within that same time cycle and put it in.
Does it matter?
With the bread.
Okay, does it matter with the bread? Does it matter what food you put in there, or is it a food you don't want?
The food that you don't want.
The food you don't want.
Because that's how you break the reaction. It's like a thief to catch a thief.
Okay. So if you absolutely say, I keep no beets.
Right.
So if he eats the beet, he only has to do it once, and that'll break
the... For the first time when you start doing it, you're going to feel a little queasy.
Uh-huh.
And you see, you're going to react. His face is already...
it's turning red right now.
So it goes a little bit at a time, but maybe you can start off with a tablespoon or a teaspoon of it in the mouth, and work through the enzymes of the saliva, and then slowly, again next day, build up till it's a natural reaction.
Until it feels okay to eat it, then you know you've beat it.
Right.
Beat it.
Mm-hmm.
Stand
tomatoes on salads, raw tomatoes, and that one is
that's
raw?
Yeah.
Okay.
But not only that, because they're raw in the sense that they're not vine ripened, and the body is phasing it off and doesn't want it.
Yeah, it's like I eat it.
But if it's vine ripened, if it's vine ripened raw, your body will accept it.
Okay.
The body knows it's not vine ripened, that's why it's pushing it back.
Okay. But tomatoes wouldn't really go on the salad anyway because you're too different.
Well, it depends on what salad.
Oh, right.
That's true. But they should be cooked anyway, right? So she didn't like uncooked tomatoes. She still shouldn't eat them.
Right? With the salad?
Well, she doesn't like uncooked tomatoes. She shouldn't eat it at all.
No,
I mean, because they're not good to be eaten unless they're vine ripened anyway, right?
Right? So if they're
so
not vine ripened, don't eat it.
So that would be...
Just cook it.
That would be one food that you wouldn't, if you didn't like, you wouldn't use that to correct a trauma because it's not a good food to eat. Only use foods that you don't like that are good to eat.
Just,
But I mean, tomatoes can't come up. They would put tomatoes on the way and sell them. They can lettuce is lower than...
Tomatoes go with lettuce. I don't see why. It goes with lettuce. You said it can't go with lettuce.
I thought that... I don't know what I was thinking. Lettuce is so close to the ground, I thought it was
more... No. Let me explain some of the foods, how they behave, so you don't get it. First, as I say, these have to be cooked. And there's only one more other food that has to be cooked. And that is... the yucca.
Yucks.
Or we also let know it as edible. These are food that must be cooked. You can't eat them. Now, here is a, in the process of cooking, what portion of the food. Now, let's say we have a broccoli. Here's a lettuce. And here is a celery. All foods. Cut them off at the hard section above the ground, and they're growing close to the ground, 4 inches up. That portion down can be used at night, and that portion can be used during the day. That's one of the advantages of soil nutrition. To know what portion of the food is edible in day or night. So you don't get left out in your minerals. Now if I want to eat the tops of the vegetables, I measure off about 2 to 3 inches off in the bottom and cut off and use the top. The bottom part I keep at night. And if I have a cabbage, I cut off this much from the hard section. Use all the top, use at the plate. Now if I come to a carrot, I can cut off that section, put it in my salad, and eat that. So you see now you're not really leaving yourself out of range and you're benefiting. So what you're saying about salad being thrown to the ground, it's the stalk and top.
Well, the top got all the light.
That's right.
And the bottom is more dark.
So that would be ideal, and so we use it at night. And so in the daytime, there it is.
Like the bottom is sort of an albino, that just like.
Yes, right. Exactly. Exactly. So you see now how the light is affecting it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you look at your own anatomy. When you reduce these off versus actually here, here is your body, here's the head. That's 1, that's 2, and that's 3. If you were to take the cabbage or the stalk of the broccoli or the cauliflower, that portion off that goes into the ground, that hard portion would help this part of the anatomy. And the soft portion will help this part of the anatomy. But it will not help this part of the anatomy. Because it doesn't go deep enough really have a full effect on Marajuna.
But you read vegetables more.
Yeah, but the one that goes down in the root in the firmer region, they will work all from this area in, all around the knee, and if you got any kind of knee cramps, you find carrot juice or turnip juice, radish juice, beet juice, they all work in here. Now, if you had what is called a pelvic problem, prostate problem, a uterine problem, or a vaginal pressure problem, bacterial pressure, then all these foods with their nasal with building the connective tissue. But it won't do anything from up here. And yet you have connective tissue here. There are foods that are designed by nature that grow up in here for the connective tissue to grow up in here. So if I had stiff armpits right above the lactation area of the breast, then I'll go looking for papaya. I go looking for mango. I go looking for avocado. Those are all connective tissue. And above all, that wonderful fruit that comes from California, was chirimoya. You ever seen chirimoya?
You're Mexican.
Chirimoya grows in California now, but it's a big fruit like that. It's like a milk inside, and it has a lot of black seeds, and it's white inside, and green outside. And it's green outside like a mango. It's rough, like a one of those have a rough texture. Oh, you don't have no problem. Just run it through the blender and eat it like that. But if you're gonna put heat to it, it should always be cut diagonally down the center first, and then diagonally. That inhibits the oxidation. So the idea of cooking is not to fry. That's one way of cooking you don't do. If you do cook, it's best to saute. And that way you cut the vegetables up, put a little water, and then saute it. And you can slowly add ghee or oil to blend in so it doesn't stick. But you don't have a need for a high heat. All you're doing is sauteing it and then take it off. Then you can put it in the oven at 180 degrees to 200 and let it dextrinize for 15-20 minutes. Dextrinization is a new technique in eating where you convert the starch into sugar right away, like high octane energy. So you don't have to go through the long process of breaking it down in your own body to work with the starch and building up the weight. Starch is what builds the weight. Staying there too long, the calories stay too long, the cholesterol stay too long. So if you dextrinize the food, that automatically converts it like a high octane. It's the difference between unleaded gas, regular gas, and supreme. You get the most out of the food because you bypass all that time in the colon for utilization. So by partially cooking it in a saute manner, just, and then putting it in the oven at 180 degrees to 200, and leave it there for 15-20 minutes later. You'll notice the difference between the two states of regular cooking and dextrinization. Dextrinization, the food tends to taste like it's sweet. You notice the food you have today tastes a little more sweet than normal, and there was no sugar added to it, simply because it's dextrinized, and that conversion action is going on, and therefore the energy ratio level is higher. Your energy output is higher.
How long
is that? 10-15 minutes.
Not even that long.
Not even that long. Yes, it's turn on to get it soft.
Okay, and then
it's
the other. What's the benefit of sautéing it first when you just put it in the oven?
No. The dextrinization would again. You have to start the process in the middle, higher heat in the water to break open the fiber and just turn it around and then face it down. And then you put it in there. And it's enough just to break it. So because the starch is still there. And so it is that you don't want to utilize the starch, but you don't want too much in the system. And so when you're taking it in raw, you have that to contend with starch to break down.
Does that happen to some degree? Do you just steam it a little first and then bake it, or do you have to put it in the water?
Over a long period of time, you can dextrinize it by like leaving a piece of bread in the oven overnight with the pilot light. You can dextrinize
it. It's the same
for a long
if you've eaten Melba toast.
Yeah, I do that with bread.
Yeah, but that's exactly what you're trying to accomplish. You see, they only accomplish it with bread. But now you can accomplish it with all the foods because we also have a starch base. And is that what you're trying to accomplish? You're trying to accomplish this dextrinization effect. How to get the maximum energy out of the food.
I understand that. I just want to know if you could steam it instead of sautéing it before you make it.
Sure. Yeah, you can do that.
It's the same thing. Oh, steam will do the same thing.
Yeah, sautéing is just one type.
Corn in the cob, you boil it.
You boil it, you can't
steam it? Yes, you can
steam it. But you want it soft.
You want it soft, right?
What's with the chest?
Corn in the cob.
Oh, corn.
Now, another question came up about how to take weight down.
I have a question before you go on. What about Dr. Jensen's powder? Now, that's powdered vegetables, and we put that in a broth. Could you dextrinize that?
Yeah. You see, the thing is this. What he did was dry the vegetables
right.
already, took the liquid out of it,
mm-hmm.
and it became powdered in order to package it.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing when you add it back into water, it will swell up back.
Right.
And then you'll have now like a soup. Or
right.
a thickener.
Right.
That way you're getting the minerals into the body and you can blend it up and become like a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Only one problem is you don't know what combination of vegetables are in the container.
Well, he has a thing on the side. So could you take that powder, if you did that, if you wanted to dextrize that powder, could you set it in the oven as a powder or would you set it in the oven as a soup?
As a soup.
As the soup you
yep.
would do it.
Don't set it in the powder because you
don't do it. Okay.
But you add it into the liquid already, and then that liquid act to release, then it will dextrinize.
I see. Okay.
So or you can add it into the food, like say, mix it in with rice,
mm-hmm.
or with beans, or any kind of a combination of vegetables, and then it will start a dextrinization drink. But just to put it like that in a powder form, no wonder.
You mean you'd have to put it in the rice or beans in the oven and let it sit? Okay, gotcha.
It has to mix with something to start the process. It just be a corn.
Okay.
Okay. In the weight loss or weight gain, if you follow the almond ratio of 1 almond to 10 pounds of body weight, you can then start regulating what body weight you want to be at. Because that automatically sets the hydrochloric acid in your stomach, and every other food then will be fixed to break down within that category.
Hmm.
So you have a natural weight loss process by fixing the hydrochloric tolerance. Without having to do massive programs, the timing automatically begins to take over. So it's a ratio of 1 to 10. But then you must know your height and know the width of the bone across, and then multiply it, and then you'll get the actual weight.
What's height that way?
All right, let's say 5 feet 6. That's equal to 12, 5, 60, and 6, 68, 6 inches, right? Now, let's say you have a 2-inch wrist diameter from here to here. So you multiply it by 2. 2 6 is 12. 2 6 is 12, 122. That's the rational functioning weight. Now you have an ascending 10 and a descending 10. You can go 10 pounds this way, or you can go 10 pounds that way, if and when you want. If you go 10 pounds this way, the body is going to get weaker too often. If you go 10 pounds this way too often, the body will be overloaded. So you can fluctuate between 134 or 128.
You get lighter, you get weaker.
Yes. You get too heavy, you get too sluggish.
Yeah, right.
But then you find your fixed movement, you can fluctuate back and forth. So this gives you, and you regulate it by the 1 to 10. Now, if you can raise your weight by adding an extra nut. That gives you a 10-pound ratio to go up. And you can lower the weight by taking a nut off. That's a 10-pound fluctuation.
Sounds pretty simple.
Yeah. They're using that now in the astronauts, now in the cosmonauts, now.
With almonds?
Yeah. Because they regulate their weight for in space. They've got to be a...
You can't wait for a while.
I was going to say, just by eating solar, you can regulate the rate, too, because I can tell them about Bill, the jogger,
yeah,
who shows up. In fact, he didn't go back to solar for a year because of his experience. It freaked him out. He first came to me and said he wanted to lose weight, and did I know anything? So I told him about solar nutrition. He tried it. He couldn't get down, and he wanted to actually maybe lose a little too much. But apparently, it'll release gaseous pressures, which hold fluids and things like that. So within 1 week, he lost 8 pounds, and it freaked him out so bad because at the same time, O'Donnell, he would have one meal at night was 2 yams, 3 white potatoes, and he stuffed himself with all the veggies he could, and still he was losing weight until finally it freaked him out so bad, he said, that's it. And it just after a year now, he started going back into it again. Mm-hmm. So you can lose weight with solar nutrition automatically.
And if people are underweight,
once
they gain weight, when they eat solar nutrition,
will
they just automatically gain weight then?
Yes, they bring the weight back up.
Oh, good.
Now,
even if they are eating a whole bunch?
Mm-hmm. Because it's a 1 to 10 ratio. Now, if what your weight you want to be, now supposing your measurement, let's say I was weighing, I multiply my height by my wrist and I'm supposed to weigh this. But then, and I found that I wasn't weighing that, I was weighing 120 feet,
uh-huh.
I'd be 10 pounds off, right?
Yeah.
I'd have to now put in the amount of almonds to build me up back. So by putting in the amount of almonds to build the weight up, I'll start moving back up to the norm weight.
So 13 to 14 almonds?
Yeah.
Oh.
So then,
every day?
Yeah. Until I get to that weight, then I stay there, then I can fluctuate with the wrong weight after. But not until I get there. So you have to get there first.
Uh-huh.
All right. When you're losing weight, you drink warm liquids. When you gain weight, you drink cold liquids.
When you want to lose or when you lose?
When you want to lose weight, you drink warm liquids.
Okay.
When you want to gain weight, you drink cold liquids. Now, you notice most people do the reverse. People who want to lose weight are drinking what? Cold liquids. And people who want to gain weight are drinking out warm liquids.
Oh, yeah. Right.
But it's the reverse because it doesn't... To lose is to put in warmer liquids. To gain is to put in cold liquids. But yet, the craving is the reverse. That causes the trauma. Right away we realize the trauma of why they're craving it. And so they do the reverse, so they never seem to lose their weight. And they go up and down. The person who... is overweight may tend to drink more cold liquids, and a person who is underweight will tend to drink more warm liquids because of the traumatization. And when they start to correct it and put in warm liquids to lose weight, and cold liquids to gain with, the body starts coming back normal.
Why does it do that?
Because when you start to lose weight, you get hot. And what's the first thing you want to do? Right? You want to cool it down. That's the worst thing you can do, because you inhibit the action of the body to burn up the excess calories. And calories represent unit of heat. So if you're going to inhibit the unit of heat by putting in a cold liquid, what did you do to the body? You traumatize the body, so automatically the body freezes up. The carbon dioxide stays in there longer than it would. Instead of going out, it tends to lock itself. So you don't want to put in cold liquids when you're losing weight.
I've noticed sometimes not doing anything, I lost weight. And she said, boy, you lost weight. I said, yeah, I know. I said, it's interesting. Overnight I look different. And then this week, not doing anything, it was aware of, like, you know, all was back. And I said, it's really interesting to hear this. So let me see if I could describe. So you get your body weight of what you want to be,
mm-hmm.
and then it's 1 ounce for each 10 pounds. Mm-hmm. And when do you wait to adjust it? You know, how long do you do it just like that?
When you're the right weight,
the right weight,
then you can move back and forth whenever you like. So that would, you will notice the difference when you're the right weight, how you feel. If you want to go up, it's an optional. If you want to go down, that's optional. But you, at your right weight, you will feel the ideal feeling to your body, because everything is functioning according to the right size. So the organs are set up to work with that size.
So if you didn't eat breakfast, because your body's confused.
Well, that's one meal we should never skip. You can skip other meals, but never skip breakfast, because it's an extended fast by skipping a breakfast, more than the body is willing to do or do without. So if you put in a little, it doesn't matter, just a little to pacify the or set the hydrochloric acid, this would be a whole lot better.
If you just did the almonds.
If you just did the almonds, it will set the hydrochloric acid for the day. And when you put in the other foods, it will go on and work. But that should be at least part of the condition of your health, so that you don't leave your body in a state where it can't regenerate itself quickly.
So what about the woman's bloat during the cycle? Does that have to do with the way you're eating, or is that...
Partly with the weight the way you're eating, but also, it has to do with the amount of carbon dioxide that the body is not disposing. And you'll find that the bloat stays there because of the carbon dioxide.
Which is coming from
the body's
toxins,
right.
Okay.
They're fermenting and they're not phasing out on time. So they're staying in longer.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it will start bloating up and start getting hypo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you move around, that's where dancing comes in now. It's a very wonderful aspect of your health, because you get all the body to move. I call that the autopractic technique. So your chiropractors work on you, but autopractic is you working on yourself by dancing. You get all the move. Now if you go back to Shiva and Nataraj, the Hindus were way ahead of the game. They realized that if you can shake and shiver, you can get rid of most of all the excess.
It's a ritual breakdancer.
Right, exactly.
You notice they do a lot of the same things.
Right, exactly, true.
Yeah,
yeah. You are right, because, and that's what the tantra, or tantrics, doing your tantrics, rolling on the ground, and we're realizing that these men had originally recognized some of these formulas in the body. So as to get back to build back that freedom is what you want.
No, a week ago Sunday they had a rock and roll mass. And really thin people were dancing in the aisles in the Catholic Church.
Hallelujah.
Really? And the priest said, well, if you look up the history of Christianity, this is what they first did.
I know that.
I do.
But you see, the thing is this, Christianity deviated into churchianity over the centuries. And the person who was responsible for that was Constantine at the Nicene Council. He wanted to make everybody overnight saint. he didn't want to consider evolutionary behavior. So by imposing a lot of rules and regulations, Christianity became stuck in churchianity, taking us a while to wake up now. Right? It's not churchianity, it's Christianity we got to get back at. And so we started to let go of all the old frames. And we move into the Aquarian age, the old frames are not going to be an asset, they're a burden. Because it's the attitude to yourself. That's where the real Christianity is, where the yoga is, where all the truth actually is. It is to you. See? The point of being. So you can't be another person, you gotta be you. So the other person's gotta be themselves. They're the ones who gotta make their own changes. And to try and talk them to change, you go around in circles. You gotta let them realize that when they're hurting long enough, they're gonna change. It may be very painful too for the other person, but it, you know, takes two to tango and two hands to rub each other clean.
Imagine all the teenagers that would keep going to church and all their services
are rock. Especially they get the punk rock.
Really?
Father punk.
There you go.
Church rock.
Do animals have hydrochloric acid in their stomachs? Like horses and dogs specifically, and cats?
Yes, but it's not set up the way ours is set up.
So they don't need almonds? That wouldn't work for them?
No, they said there's a, remember, all animals that feed on other animals eat the animal that are getting sick.
Right.
Animals that don't eat any animal and eat grass, they're almost like in the range of the human.
Okay.
So they behave in a similar phase of absorption and elimination.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on like that. You see? Now, man essentially is a fruitarian,
mm-hmm.
but he isn't ready for a fruitarian diet mm-hmm. or a total fruitarian diet. But essentially, his mechanism is set up for fruitarian. That is why in all tree light cycles, you will find fruit on the tree, above the ground, mm-hmm. and almost on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why he's essentially, in essence, a fruitarian.
So he can do this even with fruit? Mm.
So that's why they use the word ambrosia. When you go to heaven, you're going to live on the milk and honey and ambrosia.
That's our bodies are built even to pick fruits.
Right.
And the way we stand up with everything is to care exactly. for our food.
Yeah. So essentially, we are a fruitarian. Not really
needy. I love
it. Doesn't
have teeth or anything, logs or anything. How do you phase into that sort of thing?
Well, the phasing into the fruitarian concept of life is by going through the solar way and cleaning up. Then slowly you'll notice that you're phasing out of the vegetable, the grain, and you're following more fruit. But then again, you have to know your blood type before you start to make a drastic transition. See, so it's not something you're going to change right away and then find out it's too late, you've earned it. It's a gradual shift over. And you look at elderly people, as soon as they get into their 60s, what food they crave the most? They're always craving fruit and minimal eating.
Mm-hmm.
The younger person isn't there yet. So what you have to realize is that hormonal balancing plays an important part in the transition of the individual from regular eating to more refined eating. But you can't go faster than that because that's how the hormones are working. Yeah, it reaches its own degrees of selectivity and phasing out.
What about the macrobiotic philosophy about roots being too yin? It's just that they're doing more time in the day and that makes it
yin? Yeah. See, because we in this country we tend to overdo. So when Osawa and all these guys came along, so we were eating so much fruit and not compensating with other foods. He says we were getting too locked into that particular quality. but we need to balance back. So now the 80-20 alkaline base is very important. That answers your question about the weight loss.
In regard, what do you consider the natural hormone age balances of the body that make those conditions?
You know, years ago, they had a poet by the name of Shakespeare, and he wrote about the seven stages of life. Are you familiar with that poem he wrote? First you're a child, then you're a juvenile, first you're the baby, then you're the juvenile, then you're the young adult, then you're the executive business person in the country, and then you become the elder judge, or finally the last person in the line is the wise man of the tongue, main principal individual. He showed seven stages of society, people how they act. You have the baby, the juvenile, the young adult, the mature adult, then those who are about to retire from business exec, then they finally the supreme grand vizier, and last but not least, somebody who's so old, wise, is the final statement to whatever the community needs. Go back. It's called the seven stages of life. We go through that from babyhood to finally alderman or alderman. So these are hormonal changes. Now, out of that hormonal change comes a statement called aging gracefully. Now, this is a hormonal process where we start off as a child and gradually follow gradual way of eating and living to the process of integrating and phasing out. So the older the individual becomes, the less he, and if you break up the hormonal changes, it's in ratio of 10. Every 10 years, you see a shift in the child's mechanism, or you see a hormonal shift in the body.
Rather than 7.
Ten-year cycles.
Each cycle lasts 10 years, so you have 7 cycles, and they last 10 years each. So your first cycle will last 10 years. Your second cycle will last another 10 years. Your third cycle will last another 10 years. So I say it takes you 30 years to knock it up. That's plus minus neutral. Then the next 10 years is the fourth cycle. The next 10 years is the fifth cycle. Then the next 10 years is the sixth. Then seventh is the next 10 cycle. 10 years. But when they said 3 score and 10, they didn't mean now to die. We accepted that type of sonics, and therefore our body break down to die. When in actuality, a 3 score and 10, we should be prepared to come becoming the patriarch or patron person of the community to show them how to live without the conditions that the body is running after. We go on to the next level. So society now, the medical profession saying, we're going to live 100. Pretty soon, it's going to be a common practice to be 100. Well, what would you be doing? Eating or more indrawn activity, more creative activity, more decision activity? Right, it's more decision activity. And on that basis, you would be more less eating, because it would require less heavy fuels to make decision. It would be more refined fuels to make decision, but the brain wouldn't be ready before then. You wouldn't have the perspective, the overall know-how to make the decisions objectively right away as a child. You have to grow up to see it all and make the decision. So it's a progressional hormonal change going on in us, that we have different perspectives. And chances we will take or we would not take again is locked into the hormonal change. A man at 20, when a big decision has to be made, can be rash without too much understanding of the overall responsibility. A man of 50, looking at a man of 40, trying to make a decision in terms of importance, may be too rash again. Then a man of 70, looking at the man trying to make a decision at 55 or 60. So each level of hormonal adaptation, you have different focusing. Then when you reach the 3 score and 10, which is the rational point of decision making, if we don't phase out by making our bodies toxic, then we would be actually reaping the reward now of the clean body, the alive mind, and the warm spirit.
Lots of experience.
Yes, true, very true. See, because those type of individuals, if you meet them, and I've met some people over 100 years, the two things that stand out is their warmth. Automatically, when you meet them, there's a sense of warmth. You know, they've been here, they're always going to be here, as if they never went no place. That sense of warmth. And number two, the way they are, if they discuss anything, they tend to be more to the nitty-gritty of it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't beat around too much words. They get to the actual operation of things, that you see them, every sentence of practicality. They are so well-grained or integrated into practicality. Then you see how much time they have phased off of being practical to be practical. And if you listen to them, they save you a lot of time from having to look around to do things in an impractical way, when they can see the overall picture and give you the practical outlet. That's why I like to talk with them, because they have the insight of the evolving race. And if they have the insight and how long it took them to evolve to where they are, then they can say how long it will take us to evolve, then I've got something of value to look forward to. It'll take less time to reach their stage, but nonetheless I got to go through a certain amount of time to that stage, which is valid. Yeah, the illusion of time is very, very obvious in consciousness when you're evolving. Because, alright, from this morning you came to now, what you heard seems so, oh my gosh, it's so compressed, you know. And then it all seems like it's enough. And yet you realize how much you've covered. It's more than fantastically covered. This is the thing we're talking about, of relativeness. We have to learn to understand these things. One more thing I wanted to clear up in nutrition is that when you eat, and the time you eat it, attitude still plays an important part in when you eat it. Because even Jesus said, it's not what you put in that defiles you, but what comes out of your mouth that defiles you. And I was saying to the young man last night, if you're chewing food and you're calling me a son of a gun, before, even if I hear it, the enzymes working on the minerals in your saliva will be swallowed back by your mouth, and the toxicity would be there from the sonic resonance of the attitude of those words. You can say son of a gun in a joking manner, it wouldn't register toxic. But if you say it in a vengeful way or very negative attitude, it will register on the saliva. And I, the person who hear it, may not even be affected by it. And you, the person who is saying it, end up having the hardness in the tummy or the abrasion or the ulceration. Even though it has a value for you to, it lets you release your hostility of reaction. But at the same time, it is going to be more detrimental to you in the end because it's going to irritate the lining of the stomach. So the more we can accept people for what they are, and the more we can eat with an attitude of, this is doing me good.
Not listening to the news while we eat.
Too much Dan Rather.
Maybe not eat at all. It's a blessing.
What about eating if you're angry and you swallow at that point, but you're not eating of the enzymes that you
do? Put it this way. If you're angry at someone, normally they say don't eat because the enzymes will be toxic. And then you will feel traumatized. What you should do, get your food and make sure it's a food at the time of day and stick it down out, like the lion. That's why they call it lion pose. See, the yogis were smart. They didn't want to tell the world to but get rid of the hostility by doing it. So they said, practice lion pose. And so you sat down there for a few seconds, emptying the hostility out of your system. Then you could eat the meal without any frustration coming back into the bloodstream. But it was their way of getting the mind of the people in the community to accept frustration, aggravation is part of the living, but phasing it out is also up to you how you react. So they generated posture and facial mind to break it out. And this is one of their ways. Now, you don't feel nice? I said, no. You ever think of a lion? I say, yeah. What, they call him king of the beasts? Good. If he's the king of the beasts, should he worry about any of them aggravating him? I said, no. I said, do you know how to do lion pose? He says, no. He says, well, this is how you do lion pose. And he sat there for a while. He says, now try it, Mr. Lee. He says, now enjoy it.
Enjoy it.
And then in the meantime, he signaled to his friend to bring some food and said, would you like to join me eating? I said, sure. He said, can I have blown my mouth? He said, now enjoy eating with the release. And these were men in their 80s and 90s who understood yoga far more than the average individuals. And they're telling you that the lion pose was their way of phasing out the hostility of being aggravated by someone who aggravated them. And instead of using some remark to hurt that person, feel, yeah, it's good, it's valid, it gets rid of the stress. I have a lot of patients who come into the clinic and they have this problem until you get them to
yeah.
All that goes on, and you start laughing, feeling better.
You do the acupressure points right here too.
Huh? Very true. Yeah. But they do have to release it in some form or the other. So you go to Dr. Janowski and make you pay him $1,000 to yell in his clinic.
Yeah, right. It's like
he's called Primal Scream.
Primal Scream.
So you can go buy all the Tarzan movies and imitate Tarzan.
Right.
Yes. Do that out here, great.
You know, right,
good
right. You don't
have to direct it at someone though when you do it.
Yeah, right.
Well, one time I got angry with some people, and instead of feeling uptight, I went and got myself some balloons, blow them all up, and wrote their name on the balloon. And I took a pin and stuck it out. Get rid of the heart.
It broke
the stress because they popped. They said, well, they're nothing but hot air. And I said, they could think the same thing of me, I'm nothing but hot air too, so I'll just start to laugh at myself.
Yeah, because we're really, that's all. Yes. I wanted to ask you about taking supplements that are supposed to be taken at different times of the day, like what age you eat. I know spirulina's night, aloe night, but I was wondering about A, and like the B's and C and E, well, the ones I'm taking is what I'm wondering.
Vitamin A comes from many sources. Make sure you check the one in the label, and if you don't know it's coming from...
It's a vegetable source, vegetarian protein. I mean vegetarian protein.
But some can come from beta-carotene, which is a carrot source, which is underground. And much beta-carotene, most of it actually comes from a corn source, and so you got to check that out.
That's right, you see. So you have to check out where it's coming from. And that is on the label now. They're not going to tell you what time of the day on the label, but they are going to tell you the source, if it's carrot or corn.
And unfortunately, it's much, much, much better to chew.
That's right.
And it's better to chew, right. How about like calcium supplement?
You're still going to come from a growth cycle or from a layer cycle.
It comes from the seabed.
So that's night time. You can't go wrong. When you read your label correct, and you can do your kinesis too, and double check, and you have a better guidance as to the input time.
Hey, how about like E, which is like, E, which is not natural. You know what I mean?
You can get it natural. You can get a dry E even now from a soybean source.
I know, but the thing of it is, as long as you can get E, a lot cheaper than the others.
Wheat germ oil is E.
Wheat
germ oil is E.
Wheat germ oil is E, that's true. But I've got some supplements that get along, you know.
Synthetic.
Is that okay? Should you not take
all synthetic products are made from coal tar.
Coal tar.
So in the middle of the day, that's the only time I do it. If I have to take a synthetic product, coal tar, and to make a coal tar, had to be a tree at one time, that when the earth cataclysmic itself, it fell down and cremated itself in the ground for long centuries, and therefore it was back up into the tar veins, and then they extract that out of the coal, you know, doing their synthetic basis. So they're all made from coal tar.
All
coal tar in the middle of the day.
But better to take natural supplements.
Yeah, better to take natural supplements.
So is calcium and dolomite, oyster shell or something like that?
That's middle of the day.
Dolomite
is middle of the day.
Dolomite
what?
It's a what?
It's better not even.
I don't know, oyster shell.
Oyster shell
is
really hard to
digest
anyway.
Dolomite
is a rock.
Dolomite is a rock.
Not a
oyster
shell.
Eggshell is calcium.
So minerals, rocks, etc., like homeopathics, are they middle of the day?
Yeah.
Why?
Because
they sit on the ground.
Sit on the ground and they're from the depths of calcium. But your calcium, if you take the vinegar, now here's a good example. You can take an egg and put it in a dish of vinegar.
Right.
For a while, let the egg cover over the vinegar. The vinegar cover over the egg. And after a while, you'll see what will happen. all the calcium will dissolve into the vinegar.
Lemon does that too, I just read.
Yeah, okay.
Drink the vinegar?
No. You take that same calcium and strain it. You take the, so you strain out the vinegar. And you get the calcium from the egg that has been dissolved. And you can take that now at night.
That's at night.
Now, really, really, do you need calcium? You need it for the teeth. You need it for the bones.
For relaxation for the muscles. I find that if I don't have calcium, I get, like I say, a lot of pain in my back. And I get a lot of, I get leg cramps.
It's right. It's not the calcium. The calcium is the, gets the credit for something else that's causing the problem. It's the iron that the body is not getting. So the cramp is appearing and calcium gets credit for moving it. But you see, here is, you take a cow and let the calf nurse from it, it gets milk. And if the udder is bruised, the blood will mix with the milk. Now that's very bad for the farmer. So he will lose the calf. And if he doesn't hurry, he may lose the cow. So this is what we do. We take the milk from the cow and we make cheese. We hit the cow on the head and make hamburger. We take the grain that the cow is eating to get fat to make a bread. Mix all three together and melt it up and we call it cheeseburger. Then we end up having cancer. The problem is that the iron and the calcium are antagonistic to each other, and the fermentation action of the grain throws the whole process in a whole carbon dioxide pattern. So here we come along, feeling cramps in our mechanism, say we have calcium deficiency, when it's actually carbon dioxide restriction from different traumas and iron not moving on time to give it a flex. The calcium is set in there to interface, to interact. Now, the two are opposition to each other. So when iron hears calcium is coming, what does iron do? Starts moving. So you, the calcium gets the credit, but is the calcium, is the iron that is need to...
Oh, I see, the calcium starts the iron moving, so when the iron moves, that gives you the relief, but I'm suckered into thinking it's the calcium behind the fact, well, that's what I've read.
Right. So you keep putting in more calcium only to find that your iron is sitting right, idling periodically all the time. So your body is traumatized to iron in some way and it's not utilizing iron on time. So it's requiring calcium to come and push it or aggravate it to move. Whereas it needs to go to those tissues on time and it's not going there on time. It's going there too late. So you have a sensation of stiffness in the muscle, cramping up or cooling down, freezing up. And then you want to get calcium to go in there to cause the situation to get loose.
So I should be taking iron instead of calcium.
No, you should start correcting the iron content of the body. Now, you said you don't like beets.
Right.
And you're telling me the lower part of your anatomy. You're not telling me the upper part of your anatomy. You're pointing to this part of the anatomy. Yeah. That's a nighttime part of the anatomy. Beets is nighttime. And if you're allergic to a nighttime food, what would be the result in the body? You have a lower anatomical breakdown, right? That's the obvious symptoms, that's the obvious deficiency, and it's the obvious trauma. Now, my question is, what color comes to your mind when you think of that problem?
It's in red. You mean what color comes to the problem that I have? Mm-hmm. Well, red comes to my mind.
All right, before that problem ever showed up in you, did you have any change of lifestyle? Did you make any drastic change prior to the time?
The time I had